Middle show of the work week. You know what that means. It's your opportunity to ask Amy anything. So send your questions to our show Twitter, where producer Jay can find them. After Hours CBS, also our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. And while you're there, make sure you vote for TD of the Week, because the poll is still open. The polls are still open for a few more minutes. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Whether you're looking to purchase a new home or refinance yours, Rocket Mortgage can help you get there. For home loan solutions that fit your life, Rocket can. It's kind of cool when interviews and special guests fall into my lap. It doesn't happen very often, but about a month and a half ago, a PR contact reached out to me. He had gotten my name and number from a fellow friend of ours, and he said, "I was wondering if you'd be interested in having Danny Werfel on your show." Now, as someone who watched Danny Werfel play college football at Florida and remembers the hullabaloo and the excitement that he generated, but also that Gator football tradition that was started with him and Steve Spurrier, put them on the map as a national power, I said, absolutely. So we set it up, but not so much to talk about football, but because Danny Werfel has found a new passion and a new purpose in his life. He and his family, they have taken a pretty drastic turn in terms of where they spend their time and their focus and what they pour their lives into. And you are really going to love this conversation. He's had a lot of challenges. He's had to go through major pitfalls. And yet it's clear that he is on the right path, the path that he is supposed to be on, he and his wife, Jessica. So it's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. I had a chance to catch up with the former Heisman Trophy winner and College Football Hall of Famer, also former NFL QB, earlier on Tuesday. And I had been perusing his Twitter and saw a couple of photos that caught my eye. So that's where I started with Danny. I saw a photo with you and your son that you had moved him into his dorm room in Florida. And I was wondering what that was like for you, Danny, and what the fall kind of conjures up in terms of football, all the emotions with the years that you spent playing the game.
Well, yeah, definitely a lot of double feelings there. You know, fall is always an exciting time in Gator football and brings back a lot of memories, seeing the team on the field and all those things. And this year is just very, very special and different. You know, we have three kids. Joan is our oldest son, and so to take your first and kind of drop him off and leave him is a big deal, especially for mom. And it was a really bittersweet moment. And, you know, interesting, though, my wife, you know, she loves the Gators and she's a fan, but we live in Atlanta and don't get to a lot of games. But now that she has a son there, all of a sudden she wants to go to Gainesville for every game now. So that works out well.
Was your son considering other schools in addition to Florida, or was Florida always his destination?
Well, he always would have loved to have gone to Florida, but he definitely applied to other places because it's pretty tough to get into Florida these days. It was once again just yesterday announced that it was ranked in the top five public universities, and it's a really great school. So he was very excited to get accepted, and we were very thrilled as well.
Ah, congratulations. And there was a photo there with your former coach, Steve Spurrier, who has been around football in various forms, whether it be college or pro. What does that relationship mean to you, a guy that has impacted so many lives in that arena?
Yeah, I mean, you think about thousands of people's lives, and certainly my life. I mean, the entire trajectory of my life was changed by the chance to play for him and the success we had, and it really just shaped the arc of my life in general. And then also, just honestly, it's been great after he's retired. You know, he's got a lot more time and a lot more energy, and he's just really fun to be around. And it's kind of like some people say, when someone's your parent, it's one thing, but then when they're your grandparent, it's like another experience. So Coach Spurrier is kind of like, now that he's retired, he's like the grand coach, where you just get all the best parts, and it's fun, great to be around, and I'll see him this weekend again.
It's been a few years since you were at Florida and won the Heisman Trophy and a national championship. And the game has changed so much, Danny. When you look at the landscape of college football, whether it's the growth in terms of its popularity, whether it's the NIL, whether it's this conference realignment that seems to take a new shape and a new form every year, what's your reaction to what you see now?
You know, it's really interesting. I was talking with my wife today about this very thing. And, you know, you feel like when you're in the off season and you're thinking about the transfer portals and the NIL and all the things going on, it's just kind of like, man, what's happening to this sort of amazing amateur sport that we've all loved? And I think a lot of people wonder, you know, how is this going to affect us? It'll never be the same. And I certainly have thoughts and opinions on all those things. But I'll also say that once the season started, it's like immediately you're drawn back into how amazing and fun college football is. And so I'm really, really excited that, you know, the fall is here and the games are going and there's upsets and all these things are going on. And that's sort of what you love about the game. And so I'm just really happy that that's still intact in the midst of all of it.
We're really excited to spend a few minutes with former Heisman Trophy winner Danny Werfel, also part of the College Football Hall of Fame from his days at Florida and kicked around in the NFL for a few years. I actually saw an interview that you did with Tony Dungy in which you were describing your very first play with the New Orleans Saints. But when you look back on that, Danny, how do you believe football prepared you for the next phase of your life, the next calling, the next mission field, really, that we'll talk about?
Well, you know, we could talk for days about, I think, the lessons that you learn playing football that are a part of life and sort of prepare you for life and going through tough times and teamwork and just it's not about you and all these things that are important. But very specifically, you know, I just was drafted by the Saints and got a chance to go to New Orleans, and that's where I was introduced to a small organization working in the Ninth Ward of New Orleans in a very under-resourced neighborhood called Desire Street Ministries. I started volunteering there, and when I retired, that's where I began working and have worked there ever since, even up to this day. And now Desire Street works in under-resourced neighborhoods all over the Southeast, and we've helped people in really tough neighborhoods do a lot of academic after-school enrichment, summer camps. We've helped start schools. We've helped start medical clinics. We've helped start churches. We've helped start housing programs and people getting jobs and starting businesses. And just it's been an incredible journey to be a part of that. And I'm just very, very grateful for Desire Street and a chance to be a part of it.
Now you are the executive director, and as you talk about, it's morphed through various phases and moving out of New Orleans and into Atlanta and obviously has grown. Why this ministry, Danny? Why Desire Street?
I mean, I think it is a combination of that was where I felt like I was led and just felt drawn into it. I've always felt like I've been a very blessed and fortunate person. And, you know, I've had some tremendous people pour into me and give me support. We talked about Coach Spurrier. You know, I'm not here talking to you, Amy, without him and people like him in my life. And when you look at the landscape of the world, even in America, there's just a lot of people that don't have the same opportunities that many of us did. And so the chance to give back, to be a part of that, I think is an incredibly exciting and rewarding opportunity. And, you know, just interesting newsworthy moment is, you know, I just saw in Nebraska, the interim head coach now after Scott Frost is Mickey Joseph, who many people may not know this, was working with us at Desire Street in and around Hurricane Katrina giving back. And he was coaching on our football team there, and I've got a lot of war stories of just tough things that we went through together, and I'm just really happy to see the success that he's had, and hopefully this opportunity will lead to more for him as well.
We're spending a few minutes with Danny Werfel here on After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. You mentioned Katrina. I wasn't even sure if I was going to bring this into the interview because you've had so many experiences in your life. It's hard to pinpoint one or two. And I want to make sure that we highlight Desire Street. But people may not know, I did not know until I started doing some research, that you and your wife and your son lost your home in Katrina. How did that experience change you and prepare you for what you're doing now?
Yeah, I mean, we did. We a few days after the storm, we realized we saw a picture of our neighbor's house that was underwater. And our house was a one-story house, and it was that moment we sort of realized we had lost everything. But at the same time, Amy, like, we were really worried because so many of the people we knew and loved from the Ninth Ward were missing. Mm-hmm. A lot of the people that we could talk to were missing family members, and the mayor of New Orleans was speculating that maybe up to 10,000 people had possibly drowned at that point. Fortunately, it wasn't the case, but... So it was this weird feeling where, on one hand, we had lost everything we had, but at the same time, I was safe with my family, and I felt like I had everything I really needed. And I just thought that was a very powerful kind of reminder. You know, we say that to our kids a lot. You know, you don't really need that. You want that. But I think we all get mixed up between what we want and we need, and we're very blessed, in many cases spoiled in America in so many ways that it was just a great reminder of the simplicity and having the main things in life count, and I'm very grateful for that.
It's not a natural disaster that's changed America over the last couple of years, Danny, but there are so many more people in need now because of the pandemic. We see it everywhere in our nation, the economy and the struggles for families. How much have you seen the impact of Desire Street grow, or maybe even how much has the focus had to change a little bit because of what's happened in our nation?
Yeah, well, certainly during COVID, some of the interesting, unique challenges that surfaced when kids were not in school, you know, one was the education kind of gap where people like my kids who had resources, we had internet, they just went right into online school. But if you don't have internet or weren't in a system that was able to provide that, the academic support was vital. So we had a lot of sort of different types of pod learning that was happening in some of the organizations. The other thing was, a lot of people don't realize in under-resourced neighborhoods, a lot of the children get two of their three meals at school. Mm. And so if there's no school, now you're in a situation where there's sort of food issues, but then you, on top of that, if a lot of the parents can't work because the businesses have been closed, then you can't even afford food. So a lot of the places, I was just yesterday at one of our organizations here in Atlanta, Paul Kids, and they started and are still running a food distribution center providing essentials for people in their community, and it's just an incredible adaptation to current needs. And I'm just really proud of all the amazing leaders in and around the Desire Street family that have just done such great work.
The College Football Awards have gotten so extensive. They're a national broadcast, and there are these incredible young men who are honored every year, mostly for what they do on the football field, the gaudy numbers, the incredible individual feats. You have the Warfel Trophy that you established in 2005, which actually honors athletes for something different. What was the focus when you created this award?
Well, yeah, when they initially came to me, this group in Florida, and said, we want to start a national football award and name it after you. And I was very honored, but I'm like, you know, there's plenty of awards. The last thing the world needs is another award. But they said, no, this is different. We want to honor the person who does the most community service and name it after you. And it was a very intriguing idea. And in fact, it was the former executive director of the Heisman, Rudy Riska, who finally said to me, Danny, you need to do this. The world needs this. And so we did it. It's been an incredible journey. We've had amazing winners. We often have had over 100 nominees. And, you know, one of my desires is just to shine the light on the good work that these guys are doing. So many people are doing heroic things, but unfortunately, we kind of live in a world where, you know, if you're not the best player on the winning team or you did something really bad, you're probably not going to get a lot of coverage. So this sort of gives us the chance to shine a spotlight on young men that are doing great things. And, you know, they inspire me, and hopefully it inspires others to do more. And we're really excited. Our winner was invited this year to be in New York also for the Heisman Trophy weekend. So that's going to be a really awesome opportunity to highlight our winner as well. So a lot of great things are happening, and we're glad to be part of it.
Do today's college football players know your name or recognize that you also stood on that stage as a Heisman Trophy winner, or is that too far back for them?
You know, it's interesting. So, like, I go spend a lot of time at Florida, and, you know, they're obviously very, very nice and kind and know who I am. But I also think that maybe Coach Napier maybe had given them a little bio to remind them. Florida has a Gator Growl, which is sort of a big student pep rally, and they asked me to host this year, to kind of be the MC. So I did a promo video, and I said, hey, my name is Danny Werfel, and if you're under 30, you can ask your parents who I am. And you know what? If they don't know, you can ask your grandparents. So it's been a bit, but, you know, I'm really popular with the older people. They love me.
The moms, the grandmoms, they love me. The 1996 Heisman Trophy, but also in the College Football Hall of Fame from 2013. Danny Werfel is with us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. How much does it mean to you that Florida, as well as Georgia, actually, because now you're based in Atlanta, former players from each of these schools that are going to get together and try to highlight and support Desire Street with an event?
Yeah, really our biggest fundraiser and fun event is the Desire Cup, and we play off the rivalry of the Florida-Georgia game, and right before that game we gather a bunch of celebrities and coaches from both schools and fans from both to have a very competitive golf outing, and it's just a wonderful event, and we have a lot of fun. And this year we also added a pickleball event, which actually some people know that pickleball is the fastest growing sport in the country.
It's
I love
crazy.
Playing pickleball, and we're putting together a celebrity pro-am where we've got some of the best professional pickleball players in the world. Yes, there are professional pickleball players in the world, and we're pairing them with celebrities from the same college. So we're going to have a college-themed celebrity pro-am pickleball tournament as well the week of the Desire Cup. Very exciting stuff. People can check it out, desirecup.com, for all the information.
All right. Well, I can't not ask then, as a guy who was part of those epic Florida-Georgia rivalry games, what was that like?
Well, usually if I am up here in Georgia, people are asking me, why are you living there? Like, Georgia hates you, and they're going to give you all this trouble. And I just say, you know, I played them 4 times, and they never gave us any trouble.
Oh.
But they don't like that either. But it's been great. We had a good run. I'm very fortunate to have gone 4-0 against Georgia, so I at least can fall back on that. But they are certainly the big dog in the hunt now, and what Kirby Smart's doing is absolutely fantastic. I'm just really proud of that program, too.
Mm. What did you take away from that in terms of just that tradition and how much, you know, it mattered to you when you were there, even if it's a quote-unquote distant memory now, right?
Oh, well, part of what was exciting about it was, you know, in the 90s, Florida really hadn't experienced a lot of success in the past. And so the fans, you know, it was like they were just so thrilled to win anything. And then to start winning SECs and national championships, it was really exciting. In fact, I remember I took a visit to Alabama, and one of their selling points was they just show you all the history of these incredible, you know, teams and the Bear Bryant years. And, you know, but it was like, it's exciting to go there, but you might be the 13th guy to get a chance to help them win a national championship, as opposed to Florida, man, they were just starving. And so, it was really fun. Even to this day, Gator fans, remember those moments and that winning the national title and kind of starting that, kind of tradition of excellence. Was very special when I look back at it.
So it's the Desire Cup and desirecup.com.
DannyWerfel.com links to all that. And just really excited with a lot of the things that are happening that we get to be a part of. And I just sometimes have to pinch myself to make sure I'm not dreaming when I think about what's happened in my life and what I get to do now and the things happening in the future. And just feel like I'm a very, very blessed person and very thankful and glad to help give back.
Mm. Did you have to practice getting ready for the Gator Growl?
Well, I've got a little bit of time. The event is not actually till homecoming in October, so I've been, you know, going through my scales and la 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 la. You know, Flo Rida is the one of the musicians, so I thought the kids would probably really appreciate if I performed one of his songs or something, but my kids thought that was not a good idea. So then I thought I'd tell some jokes because I think I'm funny, but they say all I've got is dad jokes. So like now I'm starting to be a little you know, conscientious about this thing and a little self-conscious of man, what am I going to say if I can't do any of that? But we'll figure it out.
When in doubt, just talk about Gator football and the Heisman. Every now and then, just drop it in the conversation.
That's brilliant. Drop the score of our game against Florida State. Throw in a joke about Georgia. Now you're talking. See, you should be my speechwriter, Amy. This is great.
No, I think you're doing great. So you can find Danny on the various websites that he mentioned or also on Twitter at Danny Werfel, W-U-E-R-F-F-E-L. Let's spell it for people who may not remember. And yes, he played football. He was a Heisman Trophy winner. He won a national championship. He was in the NFL. But his life's work now is Desire Street Ministries. Danny, it's so good to catch a couple of minutes with you. I'm sure you're going to nail the growl. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you so much. Take care, Amy.
Good stuff, huh? I had no idea, none at all, that he had lost his home in Hurricane Katrina, but he credits his time in the NFL and this time with the Saints with putting him in New Orleans, where he found Desire Street Ministries. And yes, he did lose his home, but it really opened his eyes and gave him a completely different perspective, as well as heightened his purpose and heightened his passion for those who are underserved and underprivileged and the work that they're doing now. And so if you want to find out more, Desire Cup, Desire Cup.com, and then DannyWerfel.com as well. But we're going to put that conversation up on our YouTube channel because we feel like those types of themes and that passion is timeless. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We are zooming through the Hump Show. It's going fast. Glad to have you with us. Once we get through this show, you are downhill toward the weekend here on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening.
Virtua Health is here. Here for you in all the moments that matter. Because they all matter. Here to be your trusted healthcare partner. From the simple to the serious, we ensure you can feel your best and live your life to the fullest. Find a Virtua physician at Virtua.org. Virtua Health. Here for good.
Listening to the After Hours podcast.
Freeman leading off in the third. Kelly delivers, and Freeman with a shot to right center field. Well hit, and it is gone! A home run! Freddie Freeman into the pool area. The Dodgers may not go for a swim, but that ball will, and the Dodgers take a 3-0 lead. The 1-2, Walker strikes out swinging on a slider down and in, and Walker resembled a corkscrew after that swing. And that's the fifth strikeout of the game for Kershaw, the second out of the fourth. Here's a 2-1, line drive, caught by the second baseman, Taylor. The Dodgers shut out Arizona, and the Dodgers win their ninth division title in the past 10 years. 4-0, they beat Arizona. The Dodgers now 55 games over 500. This is a season that simply has been one of Dodger domination.
This is After Hours on CBS Sports Radio.
The great Charlie Steiner on Dodgers Radio, and after a brief respite away from the NL West title, you may remember last year, the Dodgers and Giants, rivals in the division, went down to the wire very last day of the baseball regular season to determine who would win the NL West, and as it turned out, it was the Giants. That's not happening this year. Charlie is right. Domination. Want to hear something crazy? Marco Belletti is back here in studio. I know the Yankees have more home runs than any other team in Major League Baseball, and they have a healthy run differential. The Dodgers' run differential, meaning how many more runs they score than their opponents collectively, plus 320. That's disgusting. The Dodgers are disgusting, and I mean that as a total compliment. But what they're doing this year, anything short of winning another World Series, is an epic disappointment.
That's the problem. Because that's the difference right there. Because as great as the regular season is and as great as this season has been for the Dodgers, they've put too much excellence over the last 10 to 12 years.
Too much excellence?
Too much.
Too much excellence.
So
okay.
You got to figure it out. You got to be able to win a World Series. Look, they've had the one, and I don't want to hear about the COVID year. It doesn't matter. I realize the season was shorter. I don't care. You still figured it out. You got it done. That was the bugaboo. They got over the top on that one. They need to kind of cap it off, though. Another one this year would really help catapult and kind of put a stranglehold on what they've done over the last few years, because this one would be a major disappointment. The problem is the Braves and the Mets, it's going to be rough to get through the National League.
This is the first time for Freddie Freeman with the Dodgers, but of course he has a World Series ring from his time with the Braves last season. You all know how that divorce went post-lockout. He's got his sights set on World Series and nothing else will do.
I don't think you envision winning a title, division title, 3 weeks to go. I mean, usually it comes down to the wire, and it came down to the wire for them last year. I know they've clinched kind of early before. I think, 18, 19, they clinched kind of early. But, I mean, obviously that's the goal, because then you can, like I said, you can give some pitchers a couple days rest and maybe an extra day for our starters. But, you know, going into the offseason, this is one of the landing spots for a reason. It's because they try to win every single year.
That is true. They do try. Now, it's really difficult to be at the top for as long as they have 9 division titles in 10 years. And Dave Roberts is at the helm. I mean, he gets questioned like every manager does when decisions don't work out. But he is a constant driving force, regardless of who's on the roster and what changes that they make.
It feels back to get the NL West back to Los Angeles. I'm proud of our guys. Last year, you know, we got the division taken from us. And so for us to get it back, a lot of hard work. So this is the first step. We got a long way to go. But tonight, it seems like it's a home game here in at Chase Field. So we're going to enjoy this one.
I do love that field, the stadium there in Phoenix. It was kind of what Freddie Freeman said, 3 weeks to go in the regular season, and they have a 20.5 game lead in the NL West. And so that was kind of underscoring the point that I made last night, which is they're not going to be pushed. I mean, this has to be internal, but they have enough veterans on that team that they should recognize, even though there's no sense of urgency now, there's a lot still on the line, and you're going to have to find a way to increase that tension and that edginess when you get closer. Clayton Kershaw was the pitcher on the mound, got the win in Arizona, tossed 7 innings of scoreless ball, only gave up 2 hits. The Dodgers definitely need him to be locked into, maybe not MVP Clayton, but to tap into ace pitcher Clayton Kershaw, the one that's meant so much to them over the years. I will say this, though, when they were celebrating in the Dodgers, was a visiting clubhouse in Phoenix, every single photo, every single video had Clayton Kershaw shirtless, like he's J.R. Smith or something.
It's just a special night, man. You know, I think I said it out there, but just the game itself was kind of like our whole season in a nutshell. You know, Mookie makes an unbelievable play. Trey makes an unbelievable play. We get big homers from Joey, Muncie, Freddie, and everybody just does a great job, and we win the game.
He's a stalwart. He is, when you think of the Dodgers, you think of Clayton Kershaw and what he's meant for me, what he's meant for this entire organization, the whole Dodger Nation. For him to take the start today, go 7 scoreless, something like that, pretty spectacular, pretty special.
It is special. Clayton Kershaw represents, Clayton and a couple of these other guys represent this, like, it's almost like the foundation for the Dodgers, because sure, they go out and they spend money and they bring in a lot of big pieces, Freddie Freeman being one of those, but he's not the only one. Trey Turner they acquired last year, Max Scherzer too, even though Max is now with the New York Mets, but they go out and they get pieces. They never stand pat, but you do have a few guys who have been part of the Dodgers kind of all the way through. And as Marco mentioned, they won the World Series in 2020, ended the drought that stretched back to 1988. But boy, would they sure love to now turn around and win one after a full season. And the bar is set very high. Right now they're on pace to, I think I heard this, they're on pace to win 112 games. So they're sitting on 98 and there are still multiple weeks to go. But we had kind of done some quick math last night. Even if they only go 500 the rest of the way, you're still talking about another, say, 10 wins, which would put them at 108-ish, 108, 109. I mean, far and away the best team in Major League Baseball in pretty much every metric. So can they capitalize in the postseason?
I think to me the one thing that's kind of gets lost a little bit too, they just clinched the division. You see who's in second place? It's a playoff team.
The Padres.
And the Padres.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, you look at it, you got a 20 or whatever, 21 game lead. You're talking about 3 weeks left. You didn't win the division because you were really good and everybody else was average.
No.
You just dominated your way through. The second place team is going to likely be in the playoffs. That's impressive. That's really, really hard to do. But again, with everything that they set, the bar that they have set over the last, whatever it is, 12, 15 years now, anything short of getting and then winning another World Series is going to be looked at as a failure for LA. And you know what? Rightfully so.
Best home record in the majors, best road record in the majors. Get this. They have the exact same number of wins home as they do away. Handful of extra losses away from LA, but they have 49 wins at Dodger Stadium and 49 wins on the road this year.
And they've been able to overcome a lot of injuries and a lot of issues that a lot of teams, it would have broke them. I mean, if you take away Walker Buehler, you take away May.
Clayton's been on the IL twice.
You do that with a lot of teams where you take away their ace probably and one of their top three or four in the rotation. Teams are going to struggle and understandably, not the Dodgers. They don't skip a beat. They always seem to find somebody else. It's almost plug and play. It's really wild how they're able to do that.
It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Dodgers first team into the playoffs have already clinched the NL West. The rest of that picture will start to fall into place as we head through the stretch run of September. But we're just gearing up week two in the NFL. We've got an update on the significant injuries. TJ Watt, Dak Prescott coming from Jerry Jones himself. That is straight ahead.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Shotgun snap. And the ball came loose. And it came out again, and the Steelers have it. TJ Watt running for the end zone. And Watt is across the goal line for the Pittsburgh Steelers defensive touchdown. How about that?
Helping you get to the back end of the work week. Welcome to the Hump Show on After Hours.
He's a game changer. He is a freak of nature. We know it runs in the family with the Watt brothers, three of them in the NFL, and he's also the reigning defensive player of the year. Pittsburgh Steelers fans feeling like the victory over the Cincinnati Bengals in overtime on Sunday came at a very steep price because not only was Najee Harris injured, though it does appear like he will be on the field come week two against the Patriots, but it was fairly evident that right away when TJ Watt got hurt, he was uttering the phrase torn pec. I tore my pec. I have a torn pec. And so that really did temper a lot of the enthusiasm. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio, Bill Hillgrove on Steelers Radio. Well, we knew that TJ was seeking a second and third opinion, maybe looking for someone to tell him he did not need surgery, because that would eliminate him for the rest of the regular season. As it turns out, he's not going to have surgery and is going to attempt to return this season.
I can definitively say that TJ won't play this week, but I won't make any commitments beyond that. We're encouraged, and we'll just continue to look at the situation and gain opinions and do what's appropriate. You know, we're going to do what's appropriate, as we always do, whether it's him or others, from a health perspective. Well, it's going to be a cast of characters, obviously, to fill his role. Malik, Jameer being the lead candidates. But when you lose a guy like him, it's not about the guys that occupy his position of left outside linebacker. It's about how we redistribute our responsibilities collectively to produce the collective outcome that we desire. Those guys are not going to be TJ. It's not realistic to think that they're going to be TJ. But we expect them to be varsity. And we're going to formulate a plan and redistribute responsibilities to lean on our strengths, to minimize our weaknesses like we always do.
One thing that never changes is Mike Tomlin. He's the best. So the...
Never say never, but never.
Never. The kind of working theme now is that TJ will be out for 6 weeks. Will not have surgery on his torn pec, but is expected to miss about 6 weeks. He tweeted
I mean, he and JJ. I actually know if Derek is active on Twitter. I'm not sure. But he and JJ, are very active. And he tweeted a GIF of Arnold Schwarzenegger. If I tell you that, producer Jay, do you know what phrase he used from Arnold?
I think I could figure it out.
Go ahead.
I'll be back.
I'll be back. So it's actually Arnold. I'll be back.
That was pretty good.
Thank you. I can't do impressions, though, for Ask Amy Anything, so don't expect any more of that. You know, that's not my forte. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. Speaking of forte, I answer questions. I talk for a living. So you can send yours to our show Twitter, After Hours CBS, or our Facebook page, because we've got Ask Amy Anything inside of an hour from now. Malik Reed is the Malik that Coach Tomlin is referring to. And we heard from him on our last show. He had started several dozen games for the Denver Broncos, just joined the Steelers right before the season kicked off. So it falls on him to pick up a lot of these snaps and to do what he can to fill sizable shoes, as in sizable shoes. Najee Harris will be back, and so he's already back. But they certainly had to fill in for him when he left. I think it was the second quarter against the Bengals that Najee was out. And this little gem from Mike Tomlin, he was asked about Jaylen Warren, who stepped in and picked up some of the carries when Najee was unavailable.
You know, he didn't urinate down his leg, man. That's a great place to begin, you know? And that's capable of happening for a young guy. And so, I think that's been indicative of him throughout this process. And that's why he's gone from being an undrafted guy to a guy that's carving a role out.
Now, in your opinion, producer Jay, is that a Hall of Fame candidate, or is that just a drop that we're going to hear over and over?
We're
going to
hear that one a couple more times throughout this season.
So not a Hall of Fame candidate?
I don't know, because I don't know if he's really necessarily upset. He's kind of more hyping him up, saying he wasn't.
Well, sometimes
scared.
We just have drunk people on the Hall of Fame. We just have people who are fired up and full of adrenaline.
It's
so you don't think I was really impressed that in that moment he didn't use vernacular for the action. Instead, he actually used the proper verb for the action and said that. I love that he said it can happen too. It actually does happen. So I'm wondering if we could give truth serum to young guys that there might in fact have been a few of these instances that Mike Tomlin knows of where rookies or young players with a lot of inexperience are thrust into this pressure cooker and they do in fact urinate down their legs. No? Yes?
Capable of happening for a young guy.
See what I mean? It is capable of happening for a young guy. I've never actually urinated down my leg, but I have peed my pants before. And I just want you to know that when people tickle you and you laugh, if you really do have an aversion to being tickled, you're not laughing because it's funny. You're laughing because that's the involuntary reaction. But this is in college, or was it high school? I remember it was a sleepover with basketball teammates, and they thought it would be really funny to tickle me until I just about die, which, by the way, you can have a heart attack if you're being tickled too much.
Really?
I'm telling you, it's not funny, even though we're laughing. I don't want to say I'm allergic to being tickled, but I have this adverse reaction. It's terrible. And one time they got me laughing, but also so like upset that I peed on myself.
I'm being serious. That's just mean at that point.
I know it was. It was really mean. And then they're like, what? Well, I mean, I tried to warn you that it's not funny and this is terrible. It's like torture, actually, when you tickle someone who is that ticklish. I'm deathly ticklish. I guess it's better to pee on myself than to have a heart attack, but still.
I guess you can just pee on them, and then that's kind of getting them back.
Yeah, I guess. But women don't really have the aim that men have. Well, okay, we are not supposed to talk about bodily functions on this show. It's where I draw the line generally. But
I thought you were going to say they put your hand in water, like that classic sleepaway camp prank where if someone's sleeping, they put your hand in the water and they wet the bed.
Are you deathly ticklish or no?
In some spots, I don't like it. Like under my arms, like don't do that. But mostly,
that's not even funny. No, it's awful. I mean, you just put a hand near me to tickle me, and I start to get like I break out in hives. I'm definitely ticklish.
Feeling.
You know, it's not funny at all. It's awful. But the laughter is involuntary, and I'm telling you, they would not let up. I'm pretty sure it was high school because I can picture some of my high school teammates right now.
Traumatizing.
It was so unbelievably traumatic. Yes, thank you. Also, that is the maybe the second time ever I've told that story on the radio. So let's just strike that from the podcast, please. Can you not ask me anything about that at all during Ask Amy Anything?
I can try not to.
Can we make a pact?
I can't guarantee we won't get any questions on it, but yeah, I could.
But we can make a pact. That it's just between me and you and Colton, who happens to be sitting in the corner. Ask Colton, who's learning how to run the board, if he is deathly ticklish, because I need someone else who empathizes with me. No?
Colton, yes. Are you ticklish? He says sure am.
Sure am. Okay, so you understand that it's not funny just because you're laughing. Like, it's not at all. So no questions about peeing on myself for Ask Amy Anything. I've already told you. Actually, there's one more time that, well, I'm not going to tell you about that time, though. That's embarrassing.
Oh, come on.
And more embarrassing than that. Okay, so you can send your questions for Ask Amy Anything to our show Twitter, After Hours CBS. You never quite know what I'm going to say. Also on our Facebook page, because we're now dead center of the hump show. It's After Hours CBS Sports Radio.